Welcome to the Vikings Tech Podcast, where we'll help guide you through where technology and education meet. This is episode 2. In studio today, we have Mike, Jason, and John. We're going to be talking about phishing, data devices, and some new changes made at the elementary schools. So, morning, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Doing pretty good.
How's those new devices treating you, Jason?
So much fun. I can't even... The excitement is just pouring out of my mouth, isn't it?
Yeah, I hear that. And it's got to be a lot of work. So we're going to get into that in just a minute. I think the first thing on our agenda this morning was to talk a little bit about that phishing test, some of the results, and then just some conversation about phishing in general. So, John, I think you were going to lead that conversation. So all yours.
Yeah, phishing is an area that I'm really concerned about.
What's the biggest bass you ever caught?
Yeah, I'm not that kind of fisher. Remember, this is P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G.
Oh, I was getting excited. I thought we were going down to the river.
Now, the definition of this is acquiring your or someone's personal information or general information to build on. You'll get emails that look like they're from someone you know and trust, like eBay or Amazon or someone within the district. But they're not really, and they may ask you for information which could expose your accounts or could give them information that they use to then make another attempt with someone else. But now with the information you've given them, they sound a little more authoritative, so they get more information from the next person and they build their way up. What they're trying to do is get information to attack our systems, to send things in that we don't want in, like ransomware or viruses. In the first quarter of 2016, phishing attacks have gone up 250%.
That's a lot.
That's a whole bunch. 30% of phishing emails get open. So if 100 phishing emails came to the district, we can pretty much count that 30 people are going to open them up. You know, and if those are bad payloads like ransomware or viruses, you know, that's why we have antivirus programs. That's why we're trying to do some education, because it can be disastrous. At another school district I had, we had a ransomware hit us twice. Luckily, we were able to recover without losing any data, but, you know, there's always the possibility that sometimes you may not to.
I think the other big risk here is a data breach.
Yes.
That's another thing that phishing can lead to, is data breach, which can potentially leave the district out millions of dollars in liability. It's indeed something to be very concerned about, is letting data out of the building where it's not supposed to be. I think, there's federal regulations. FERPA is a real thing in education. So
HIPAA is there as well for nursing-related information.
So as I guess the big moral of part of what we're kind of getting in here is it didn't used to be a big concern, because, you know, phishing didn't used to be a big deal. There were very few attempts that were credible looking. But obviously, as we found out during our test, the way that phishing looks can be extremely realistic looking. How many people actually opened our link when we sent the test out? Do you know, John?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
I think it was north of 50.
Yeah, it was more than I wanted to see, which would have been zero. I sort of expected to be more than zero, but that's what we have. There is a site that is a good place to get just general information. It's www.phishing.org. It gives a nice overview of what it is, how it's done, what kinds of attacks you're going to see. There are some things you can look for. We did send out an email the other day with some information regarding red flags to look for in emails that might clue you that this is a phishing attempt. The other thing is, there's several things. One is, you know, look for an unusual urgency in an email, like must respond now, you know, immediate action required. Most financial institutions are probably not going to have that urgency. They're also probably not going to ask you for information regarding your account in a form or a link in the email. poor design. You know, these companies have spent a lot of money to have their sites look nice. So if you click on a link and it takes you to something that looks sloppy, it's probably not the site for that company. Misspellings. Oh, my goodness. You know, the ones I've seen, you know, horrible grammar, horrible misspellings. Again, these are built by professional web designers and copywriters. There's not going to be typos. There's not going to be bad grammar. So pop-ups. Most sites will not use pop-ups because they know it's a spam or a phishing delivery tool. So if you any of those things appear on the site you're looking at, be very cautious.
So you mean about the 1 millionth visitor to the website?
Probably not.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Everything.
So I guess, you know, to kind of start bringing a wrap to this segment is we're looking to make sure that you're aware of the risks and what can happen with email. I think it's clear that education's becoming a target. People out in the public are well aware that teachers like to help people. I mean, that's why they got into teaching, is to help kids learn. It's why we're all here. And because of the time crunch in between classes is when most folks are looking at their email in that little 5-minute window, you tend to glance through it very quickly. And if you see the 2 or 3 keywords you're looking for, you don't vet the rest of it. And that is a very risky behavior with email. We're working on trying to bring some awareness to you and help you with that. And we also want to make sure that everybody knows we are going to continue with our phishing tests. They're not always going to look like the one we just did. We're going to keep an eye on the risks. And if the risk factors are showing us that we need to do more about it, then we will do some work to help remediate that with extra training. So I think that kind of covers phishing from my perspective. Or you cover everything you were looking for there, John?
Just a couple things that, you know, the phishing people will use any hook they can to get in. You know, so far this year, there's been an IRS scam, the Hurricane Harvey scam, Game of Thrones, business email compromise. This is something called spear phishing. It's aimed at particular people. There have been 500 attacks. They're trying to get into, like, CEOs and such. A lot of it's coming from our favorite country, Nigeria.
The princes are back.
Yeah. Amazon had a scam. The University of Illinois had a two-part scam, which was a little scary. Windows 10, you're going to see fake security alerts. You know, call us. You know, take care of this problem. Those are all scams. They're not real. So don't fall for them. Phishing delivers 73% of the malware that comes into a business. 73%. So phishing is a very, very big target that we have to be careful of.
Yep, absolutely. So, okay. So I think the next thing up on our list was to talk a little bit about some data flow and some processes. So for those of you that don't know, one of the new projects that we're working on down here in the tech department is through CSIU is a program called ZAPS. And ZAPS is going to allow us to take data out of CSIU and use it to build into other systems. So we're going to try to work on making it so it's easier for the librarians by getting the accounts created in Destiny right away when kids come in and get put into the system. We're going to try to make sure that as we start moving forward with other tools, that we're automating those processes so that systems aren't waiting for people to manually enter data. It's not something we've had before. And as such, there are some challenges that are coming up with that we are working through down here. And a lot of it has to do with clean data. And that's a concept that until you start automating, nobody really knows anything about. So, John, you had some experience doing automating at North Hills. Can you, talk a little bit about clean data and the challenges you had over there?
I actually worked for 10 years for a company that sold software and services to financial institutions for what's called data hygiene. Many banks would use it to standardize names and addresses and abbreviations. It was big business. It's important to have clean data. L.L. Bean was one of their bigger customers because they wanted to dedupe their mailing lists. It cost money to send those catalogs out. The use of standardized data will give us the ability to automate additional processes. The beginning of the year is a fun time for everyone as people move around. You know, all the tickets come in saying, hey, I'm no longer at this building. Can you add me to this? You know, put me on the email distribution list for the other buildings that I'm now in. And we can automate some of this if we have clean and properly coded data in CSIU. We can transport that data over into our directory systems and build these distributions lists dynamically so that as soon as a person is now part of a different building, it's automatically there. We don't have to do it manually. We can allow these things to be done automatically. Makes it happen faster and more responsible, more reliably.
Yeah, and that's good. I think, I mean, the main name of the game here when it comes to all this data automation and all this stuff we're talking about is that we want to try to make sure that the data in CSIU or other source systems that we'll use is consistent. So one of the big changes that's going to affect everybody is we're looking to change the student username to match what CSIU is already using for their username, which is their student number. And by getting those things to be consistent, it allows us to marry the systems together in such a way that instead of having to wait days, weeks, or however long it takes us to get to a ticket, the stuff's there the minute the data goes into CSIU. And I think the big thing there is to just make it, you know, so that as we start coming into problems or we look to make changes to how we do entry into CSIU, just so you everyone's aware, this is kind of the why. Is we're starting to do some of these things and we're starting to automate data flow out of CSIU into other systems so that it can help us instead of hinder us. So the other thing we wanted to talk about a little bit was reporting tickets. We've had some influx, and I think there's been some frustration from some folks on some of the tickets that we've dealt with. And I think that frustration kind of has flowed on both directions. So, Jason, you've had a few tickets that have come in where you've had some issues discerning what the problem actually was. So could you talk to us a little bit about the type of information you need from teachers when they call in the tickets?
Yeah, no problem. So my computer's broken. That doesn't really tell me a lot about what's actually wrong. Keyboard not working, mouse not working, screen not working, etc., etc. As much information as you can provide us in the ticket, hey, my teacher desktop is not projecting to my projector. There's nothing on the screen. Or when Billy logs into computer number 7 in this lab, he's not getting internet. As much information as possible helps us help you. So, I mean, room location, computer number on everybody's computer. When it's signed in, it'll say host name in the upper right-hand corner on the desktop. That information is very useful to us, as is everything in that little box.
Yeah, but we don't need you to give us the whole box right. Every time.
Just the host name is...
As long as you give us enough to identify what computer you're talking about. I've taken a few tickets where instead of actually going forth and just working on the issue... the first thing I have to do is find a teacher who signed up for the lab and called in a ticket but isn't there at the moment, and I don't know what computer was broken, and by the time I find them, they don't remember. And it's so, and obviously at that point, then we're looking at potentially up to like 20 computers trying to figure out which one had this one problem. And that obviously consumes a lot of time, and it frustrates everybody in the process. So making sure you tell us what computer or printer or whatever it is that needs...
Or extension if you've got a phone issue.
Yeah, or the extension for the phone issue helps us identify where to start looking for problems.
Yeah. Another example here is, hey, I got this error message on my computer when I clicked on something and now I can't do what I was doing. Well, what did the error message say? Once again, the more information you provide us helps us help you faster.
Yeah.
Depending on what the error message says, that could be one of 20 different things.
And I think logging onto the computer, the errors that can happen there is probably the easiest example to talk through. You know, if I can't log onto the computer, Jason, what are the three errors that possibly could cause that problem?
The three main errors you're going to run into is username and or password is incorrect.
Which is usually either, I mean, most of the time, and I mean, it's not easy to say this to people directly, but it's an end user problem. You're not typing it right, or you have a missed memory of what it is. That stereotypically is the cause for that particular error.
Correct. Want to make sure when you go to type in your username and or password that there's no extra spaces in there. I've been noticing that a lot recently, that maybe they had a book set down on the desk and it hit the space bar and the username has about 50 spaces in it that you don't know.
Or so at the beginning.
So when you try to type in your username, and everything looks correct, and it'll frustrate you, and you'll want to pull your hair out, or something along those lines. And you know, it's a quick little thing to check there. One of the other errors that you're going to see is there are currently no logon servers available. If you see that, there's a good chance you're going faster than the computer. I know it's hard to think that, but there's a lot of stuff that goes on the background when you turn a computer on. Handshakes have to be made with the servers so that when you go to sign in, our servers can say, hey, I know this person. I'm going to let you on the internet or to log into the computer. If you try to sign in too fast after the computer was on, you're going to get that message. 9 times out of 10, you wait 30 seconds, you sign back in, everything's perfectly normal. The last issue that, well, I wouldn't say the last, the last three of the examples that we're going to give is a third most common one is the trust relationship between this computer and the network and or domain has been lost. Please contact an administrator, something along those lines. That basically means the network, our domain, doesn't know what that computer is. It doesn't know where it came from. It doesn't know who it is, so it's not going to let it on. Whether you have your right username or password, it just doesn't trust you, so it goes into protect mode and won't let you sign in.
And it's not you. It's the computer has not been defined in the system.
Correct, right. Yes. There's usually some issue with the computer on the back end that requires one of us to take a look at it.
Yeah, so. I mean, like John said, it's not you. It's the computer, and the computer decided at some point in time to stop talking to the server. Either it hadn't been on for a while, or it's possible somebody down in our department made a boo-boo. That happens, and it can cause that error. And, you know, we might have disabled a machine that we didn't know where it was, or that it didn't have a proper name, and we didn't know why it was there. So things happen. That error is something that those is very different to fix than either the other two. So from the basic, I can't log in, there are three different issues that require three different types of support. If it's a username and password error, that's usually something we can do over the phone and can call you very quickly and take care of. If it's the network is not available, if it's not you going too fast, it might be a bad cable. We will physically need to come there, but if we don't come there with a cable, we can't fix it. And if it's the last problem, we need to come there with a laptop and kind of log into the machine a special back way in order to get into the local admin account and reset its connection to the network. So each one of those has three very different types of support that need to happen, and it's all based off of what you can tell us. And if we know what we need to do the minute we look at your ticket, we can prioritize it and get there faster than if we have to go off being detectives first. So as you're coming into putting in issues, the more information you give us, the best, the better. I mean, that's really kind of what we're trying to get at there. I mean, another issue that comes up a lot is if you hit one of the block pages, it's imperative that you tell us where you were trying to go and what the block page actually said, because that gives us a clue as to why it blocked it. And that tells us when we go in to talk about approving that with an administrator, whether or not it can be approved quickly or not. Certain sites we have to clear with principals, certain sites we can approve down here on our own. It all depends on what the content is and what you're trying to do. So giving us some of that clue and talking to us a bit about why you went into it is key for helping us get it to the right person to get you the approval as quickly as possible. But if you just say the page didn't work, we don't know if it was, you know, an error on their server side, if there was a connection issue, if it was our content filter, we don't even know where to start. So then we end up going back and forth a few times until we actually ascertain what happened. And that's happened a few times. There have been several people who have done that just in the last, you know, month and a half. So, you know, just trying to help you navigate the system and help us help you faster is what we're trying to do here. It's not about pointing any fingers at anybody. We just want to make sure everybody is able to do what we need to do as quickly as possible, because, you know, we want to get you back into classroom teaching, because that's why we're here. So, all right. So I think that covers our procedural fun for the day. Now we get to start talking about the fun stuff, the new things that are coming for everybody, the exciting stuff, right? So I guess the first big thing to talk about. Yeah, thank you, John. The first big thing to talk about is going to be new equipment. We did get approval from the school board to get new equipment. So it's a you know, little later in the cycle than when we in the IT department would like to have it come in. But we got approval, and we're all kind of stoked about it in our own way. Jason's probably stoked about it in the most terrified way, because he's responsible for putting it together. John's stoked about it from the sense that he's not sure how this many more devices on the network is going to affect things. So we're working on working through all that and getting everything ramped up and prepping everywhere in the buildings and working on getting everything set up. And I'm stoked because we get to come out and get some equipment in the hands of some kids. So, I mean, that for me, I'm probably the only one in this room that's actually truly excited about it. So, but that's okay. We'll get there. So the Chromebooks are on site. Jason, we got about how many Chromebooks came in?
210, I believe.
Yeah, so we have about 200 going into deployment. We'll have 10 in reserve for repairs when it comes up this go-round. And that 10 is our repair units for all 400 in deployment iPads or Chromebooks that are out there right now. So that gives you an idea of what we're working with down here. And then our iPads that we ordered are on the way. They have not yet arrived. But the order's been processed, and then they're coming. So I actually just got some communication from Apple yesterday that they want to start phasing some shipments to us here over the next week. So, nice. So that'll be good. We've got carts in for the Chromebooks. Carts are the trays for the elementary school iPads have started to arrive. We have three of them here in our office. So everything's coming, and it's starting to come quickly. So with that comes the other big caveat, which is please be mindful that while we're working on these things, we're pulling extended shifts. We're doing as much work as possible to try to balance tickets and the projects. And we're trying to do our best to make sure we get this equipment to you as fast as possible. So please be patient with us as we go through all that. And the next thing on our list is to talk about the cool new fun toy in the elementary schools. I'm sure some folks have probably noticed this. I've heard some feedback about it already, but Jason, you want to talk about what we got set up?
Certainly. So at the elementary schools, we've implemented a new auto login feature on the computer labs. We tested this first at Independence on their computer lab, and that was a overwhelming success. We found out a couple settings that we needed to monitor or change during that time that we have gone ahead and made, and then pushed it out to the rest of the classroom computers in Independence, and have rolled it out to, I believe, Hopewell Elementary, to their lab and
their
computers.
Hopewell's lab and Margaret Ross's classrooms.
Yeah, we're doing this in stages just to make sure that everything goes smoothly, and if there's any other hiccups that we experience along the way, just because they're different machines in every location, so each model might have a little special tweak we need to make. But once this is rolled out in the elementaries, when you turn on a computer, you no longer have to enter in a username and password for the students. It'll just automatically log in for them.
With the generic password for the building, or generic account for the building.
Correct, with the accounts that you already have used. And then at the end of the day, the computers will shut themselves off.
Well, we would still request you shut them down earlier.
Correct.
But if you miss them, they should shut themselves off in the evening. It's important, though, to understand that if the computer goes to sleep and wakes up, it's going to ask for the password again. So when you're not using them, it's best just to shut them off. The kids can turn them on, and that's going to help us save electric.
Yep.
And that's lower bills is good, because that means there's more money available for other things.
And less stress on the teachers from being woken up, and not woken up, but the teacher doesn't have to walk over there when Jimmy turns on the computer to take his AR test. Jimmy can just turn on the computer, and it automatically will log him in, and he can go and take his AR test and off to the next kid, and Sally can come up, do the same thing. So that's less stress on our teachers.
Right, absolutely. So the next question I'm sure we're going to get, though, Jason, can we do this at the junior high or the high school?
We could not do that, actually, because we don't have a universal account for the students at the junior high and high school. Each student in the junior high and high school has their own username and password that is currently being used for them to log on to the computers with.
All right. John, you want to talk a little bit as to why we don't want to use generic accounts at the junior high or high school level?
By using generic accounts, you can't have this distinction of I'm connecting to my data. Everyone would be sharing the same folders to put the data in. So by requiring a student to use a unique account for them, they get connected to their Google Drive. They get connected to their home folder. The other thing is it allows us to track activity. If there are questionable things being done, we can know who that person, child or teacher, is that maybe visited sites that are not sites we would like them to visit. So there is an accountability issue at those levels that we want to make sure we can follow through on.
Yep, absolutely. So, I know it definitely sounds appealing to anybody to not have to have the kids log in. But at the junior high and high school level, just for compliance reasons, we have to have accountability per student. So we were able to roll this out at the elementary levels because the kids down there obviously are not going to be able to remember passwords easy. And this is kind of a temporary thing. Eventually, as we get the systems in place to do this, we're looking to create a way for those kids to have individual accounts using a different kind of password. But just in the meantime, while we're bridging that gap, we're trying to take a little bit of pressure off as the main push of the literacy movement this year really affects the elementary schools with that guided reading and the new Lexia tools. And we're trying to make sure they have quick access to those things as we push in. So after we get a chance to start working passwords down to elementary kids, we will get there. But rest assured, everyone who hears those words out of my mouth and panics, that it will not be difficult. And it's not going to be something the kid has to memorize. We will make it easy so that it's not disrupting the rooms. So, but I think that kind of covers everything we were going to talk about today. So if anybody has any questions, thoughts, concerns, or wants to reach out, feel free to do so. I highly encourage that you reach out to Jason and John next week while I'm out. Yeah, they will love you for that, particularly while they're busy getting carts together.
We're probably going to get a t-shirt if we're lucky.
Yeah, maybe you'll get a t-shirt while I'm out. In our next episode, which we're going to try to get out in early or mid-November, we're going to do a little run through of Black Friday sales and things for computers, Christmas buys, because I'm sure everybody tends to grab IT people at that time of the year to ask questions about devices and things to buy for Christmas. So we're going to try to put a little mini Christmas watch list together for everybody in our next episode, do something a little fun and a little different. So if anybody would like to come into the studio with us on that episode to kind of talk about the new fun toys that are out there and things to look at for Christmas, go ahead and drop me a line and email, and we'll see if we can't coordinate getting you in here for that episode recording. And other than that, I hope everybody has a great day and a great next week, and we'll be seeing everybody soon, hopefully with some new devices.
Yay. Have a good one, everybody.
See you later.